الحمد لله الحمد لله وكفى والصلاة والسلام على عباده الذين اصطفى أما بعد فأعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم وأطيعوا الله ورسوله ولا تنازعوا فتفشلوا وتذهب ريحكم واصبروا إن الله مع الصابرين وقال النبي صلى الله عليه وسلم المؤمنون كجسد واحد إن اشتكى عينه اشتكى كله وإن اشتكى رأسه اشتكى كله أو كما قال النبي صلى الله عليه وسلم Most respected علماء الكرام, brothers and elders. This hadith of Rasulullah صلى الله عليه وسلم, Allah's Nabi صلى الله عليه وسلم gives the example of the human body and compares the entire ummah to this human body. As far as the human body is concerned, then the entire body is linked together. And Nabi صلى الله عليه وسلم says that when one part of the body is in pain, is in difficulty, then the rest of the body also feels that pain and difficulty. It is not possible and is not conceivable that if the eye is paining, then the rest of the body says, this is your problem, you can do as you wish, we are fine, so this doesn't concern us. And if the head is paining, then the rest of the body says, this is your problem, this doesn't concern us. Instead, when there is a pain in any part of the body, then the eye will start functioning for the purpose of that limb. It will look for the number of the doctor to phone. The hand will start moving in the same direction for that same limb, that toe that is perhaps paining, to now take that medication. Or the legs will move in the same direction to take this entire body to the doctor. And everything will work in unison because one part of the body is aching. One part of the body is in pain. So Allah's Nabi Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam gives the very same example that in ishtaka ainuhu ishtaka kullu, that if the eye is paining, then the entire body is paining. And when ishtaka ra'suhu ishtaka kullu, if the head is paining, the entire body is paining. And tada'a lahu sa'irul jasadi bis-sahari wal-humma, and the entire body gets together and supports this person, this one limb, in taking a part of the fever that is coming as a result of the pain in one limb. The entire body shares that fever, and the entire body stays awake as a result of the pain of one limb. Now, this is the example of what the ummah should be. That one part of the ummah is part of the whole of the ummah. One person and one individual of the ummah is part of this entire body. And a pain to any part of the body is a pain to the entire body. So this is on the global scale, on the entire, in the entire world, the entire ummah at one. If this is the way it should have been, and how the entire ummah should have reacted, then we can imagine as it gets closer how much more this importance increases. That if there is somebody in a far-flung place of the world, we've never met him, we've never seen him, we've never heard of him also, as a person, as an individual, but we know him that he is a part of the mu'min, ummah, then if he is in some difficulty, some pain, some hardship, this should move us. And the very least that it should move us to do, that's the very least. And this is really this yardstick to show us that to what extent we are connected to the rest of the ummah. Is that the very least it should move us is to sincerely make dua for them. And this is something for us to reflect within ourselves, that how much of our time is spent at least once in a day for the ummah at large. for the suffering of the ummah to be uplifted, for the oppression to be raised away from the ummah, for the poverty and difficulties to be taken away from the ummah. If even that is not happening once a day, then we need to reflect deeply, what is our link and connection to this ummah of Rasulullah sallallahu alaihi wasallam, for whom he underwent so much of difficulties and hardship. In any case, if this is how important it is on the global level, then as it gets closer to one community, how much more important this would be to one family, extended family, and then as it gets closer to the immediate family, and then within the four walls of one home, how important it is that everybody is united. This is the lesson that is being given to us, the lesson of unity. That if on a global scale, this is how Nabi Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam is describing it, then what would be its importance within the four walls of one home? And this is something that Allah Tabaraka wa Ta'ala highlights in the Quran Sharif as well, where Allah Ta'ala says, وَأَطِيعُوا اللَّهَ وَرَسُولَهُ وَلَا تَنَازَعُوا فَتَفْشَلُوا وَتَذْهَبَ رِيحُكُمْ وَاصْبِرُوا. That be obedient to Allah Tabaraka wa Ta'ala, and don't create dissension, don't create discord. What is a very important aspect to remember, to understand here is, that what is being spoken about is dissension and discord, not difference, valid difference of opinion. Valid difference of opinion, it occurred right from the early stages, from the time of the Sahaba Ikram. Time is not there to delve into this, but since this is an important point to understand, on one occasion Nabi Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam gave the Sahaba an instruction, La yusalliyanna ahadukum al-asr illa fi bani Qurayza. That nobody should perform the Salatul Asr except to in Bani Qurayza. The instruction was to move immediately to Bani Qurayza. In any case, en route, now the time was now expiring for Asr, close to expiry time. So some Sahaba said that we will perform our Salah now and carry on. And lam yurad minna dhalik. It wasn't intended that we should perform our Salah in Bani Qurayza at any cost, even if the time expires. So we will now stop, we will perform our Asr Salah, time is elapsing, we will go and perform our Asr and we'll then move on later. And another group, we are also thoroughly and firmly grounded in knowledge. It's not somebody just taking out something from their back pocket. They said, no, we were given a clear instruction, we will go to Bani Qurayza and perform our Salah there, even if the time expires. And this is what happened. Some performed it en route, and some performed it in Bani Qurayza. When the expedition was over and this entire incident was narrated to Rasulullah sallallahu alaihi wasallam, that this is what happened, then in Bukhari Sharif it's very clearly recorded therein, falam yu'annif wahidam minhum. Nabi sallallahu alaihi wasallam did not rebuke either group. Both are fine. Because both was based on thorough knowledge. So this is a different matter altogether. But then again, many a person says, but who do I follow? There's so much of differences. It's a very simple thing. When it comes to our physical selves, we know who to follow. Person has a rare disease, he has some major ailment, then to start off with, he doesn't go on to Google to see how he can sort it out. Then he finds out who is the best specialist in town, and who's got the best track record, who's got the best experience, whose patients have generally been coming out well. And he goes and finds out according to that. And if there's sometimes a difference of opinion between specialists, which happens all the time, then he doesn't say, well, leave everybody aside, I'll rather go on to Google. He decides who is the most experienced, who his heart takes to in terms of the experience, the person's expertise. Then he follows one person. And then that person says, I'm going to cut you open. He says, well and good. And he pays him for it also. So likewise, when it comes to deen, we decide who has that knowledge, that experience, that fear of Allah tabaraka wa ta'ala in terms of what we can understand. The person is وَاتَّبِعْ سَبِيلَ مَنْ أَنَابَ إِلَيْهِ. Allah ta'ala says, follow the path of the one who has turned to me. So you see the sunnah in the person's life. He's not somebody that is far aloof from the sunnah and is talking big, big fancy things. So then you will follow him. And then you will stick to one person and you'll be rightly guided. And on the day of Qiyamah thereafter, Allah ta'ala won't ask you why you didn't follow so and so and why you didn't follow so and so. Provided you did your homework and you followed who you felt fulfilled the criteria. So in any case, what is being spoken about in this ayat is وَلَا تَنَازَعُ. Don't create discord. Don't create disunity. Otherwise, فَتَفْشَلُوا وَتَذْهَبَ رِيحُكُمْ. This is on a global scale and a local scale. Or whether the domestic scale, within the four walls of one home. Allah Ta'ala is saying, don't create discord. Don't allow disunity to creep in. Otherwise, you will then, all your energies will be sapped away. And you will become totally weak. As a result, then you will be easily dominated by others, by the disbelievers. What is going on today in the Ummah? So the issue is that this unity is a very, very highly required aspect in the body of the Ummah, that the entire body remains united. And one part of the body becomes a means of pain for the whole body. And as it gets closer, all the more important. Now the issue is, what is the prescription to this unity? How will this be acquired? So Allah Tabarak wa Ta'ala gives us the fundamental prescription in this very ayat. فَتَفْشَلُوا وَتَذْهَبَ رِيحُكُمْ وَاسْبِرُوا إِنَّ اللَّهَ مَعَ الصَّابِرِينَ. Then adopt sabr. And without this sabr, there cannot be unity, forget of the whole ummah, even in the four walls of one home. Between two spouses, there cannot be unity. Because everybody's likes and dislikes are not the same. Everybody's preferences are not the same. Everybody's feelings are not the same. Somebody feels hot in one condition, the same condition somebody else is feeling cold. Somebody likes to eat something hot and somebody likes to eat it mild. So everybody's likes and dislikes and preferences are all different. No two human beings are the same. And the only way that this unity can still come about, despite these differences in everybody's temperament, everybody's feelings and likes and dislikes, is the one central aspect of sabr. If there is sabr, then there will be unity anywhere. And if there is no sabr, then no matter what, this unity can't happen. Now what is this sabr required in? Just to take a very simple, basic example. And for example, a person has come to the masjid, I have to park his car somewhere. So what is a closer spot? But the spot is such that if he parks his car there, he's going to give taklif to others. Because it's not a proper parking space. But he says, I need to have my convenience, so I will park here. So for his convenience, he will park there, but he will be giving taklif and difficulty to others. The end result is obvious. So the first sabr is to undertake any difficulty that comes on ourselves in order to ensure nobody else is inconvenienced. Whether in a public situation, whether within the four walls of our home. I rather take the inconvenience and save others the difficulty. That will require sabr. It requires sabr in the home, in the masjid, anywhere. So that is the first sabr. So the person now took the sabr and he went and parked at the further spot where he'll have to walk from. But he's happy with that, because he is now not giving anybody else any taklif, any difficulty. But then after he's done his share of the job, there may still be somebody else who will go and park there. And now inconvenience everybody. So now that's the other part of the sabr. One is the sabr not to give taklif, not to cause inconvenience. The other part of the sabr is to tolerate other people's inconvenience. When a person has this in him, Allah Ta'ala is saying, don't regard this as a minor thing. Don't think, well, I now have to tolerate this person's, as sometimes people just say it, this person's nonsense and all these issues. Don't think it went in vain. If you did it for Allah Ta'ala, إِنَّ اللَّهَ مَعَ الصَّابِرِينَ, in the same ayat Allah Ta'ala is saying. Didn't go anywhere in vain. Because everything mustn't be looked at in the terms of rands and cents only. There's a hereafter coming. Otherwise, what is the use if all the rands and cents are in the hands and the person's eyes close that moment? What is he going to take to the grave? But إِنَّ اللَّهَ مَعَ الصَّابِرِينَ, Allah Ta'ala is with those who are patient. And that sabr will be a means of great benefit to him in the qabr also. That will light up his grave. That will light up the pul sirat and the bridge over Jahannam on the day of Qiyamah. That will become a means of taking him to Jannat. So Allah Ta'ala is saying the fundamental prescription is sabr. When there will be sabr, then this will be a possibility. And in order to highlight that what a cherished aspect this unity is, at any level, in one hadith, Nabi Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam gives us the reality of this. Allah's Nabi Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam asked the Sahaba Kiram, Ala ukhbirukum, must I not tell you? Creating that zeal in them by posing it in a question first. Should I not tell you something? Should I not tell you bi afdala min darajati salati wa siyami wa sadaqa? Something that has a greater rank and greater position than all the nafil salah that you can perform. If you live 100 years of your life and you perform tahajjud the entire night, qiyamul layl the entire night for 100 years, who can do that? And all the nafil fast that you can keep in your life, 100 years of nafil fast every day, besides the 5 days that are forbidden. And all the nafil sadaqah, all the sadaqah that you can give. How much can a person give? 1 million, 10 million, 100 million, 1 billion? If you can give 100 billion also, Nabi Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam is saying, I am telling you something beyond all this. What can be beyond all this and all these three things combined? Allah's Nabi Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam says, Islahu Dhatil Bain. To create peace between two parties, between those spouses that are now perhaps at loggerheads, to create peace between them, to create peace between any two persons. This has such a great rank that Nabi Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam says, beyond all these three things combined, what this highlights is, what is the value of that unity itself? That all these three things combined cannot reach the value of creating that unity. What will be the value of that unity? So this is the lesson that is being given of having and maintaining this unity. But then this unity has to have a basis. If there's a home, there's a structure, there has to be a foundation. What is the foundation on this which this unity will stand? So the foundation is what Allah tabaraka wa ta'ala speaks about in another ayat of the Quran Sharif. وَاَعْتَصِمُوا بِحَبْلِ اللَّهِ جَمِيعًا وَلَا تَفَرَّقُوا. That hold on firmly to the rope of Allah tabaraka wa ta'ala together and don't become disunited. So the only way that this unity can be maintained and can be created in the first place, if it's all on one foundation. And that one foundation in the ayat of this Quran Sharif, Allah ta'ala says, all holding on to the rope of Allah ta'ala together. Now if somebody insists that I'm going to do something else but we're going to remain united, like for example, there's a group of 10 friends and now 3 decide that we are going to be going to the rave clubs, we're going to be taking drugs, we're going to be womanizing, and others say, well, we're not going to join you then. They say, well, now you're creating disunity. We have to remain together, we are 10 friends from 10 years. So the responsibility of the disunity is on those who want to do the wrong thing. They are responsible. We cannot unite on the disobedience of Allah tabaraka wa ta'ala. So the unity will only be possible provided it is on the correct foundation. And the foundation is Hablullah al-Mateen, the rope of Allah tabaraka wa ta'ala, which is the Kitabullah. And in one hadith, Abdullah bin Mas'ud radiallahu anhu says, Alaykum bihablillahi al-Mateen, Alaykum bil-kitabi wa sunnah, or bil-jama'a. Hold on to the rope of Allah tabaraka wa ta'ala, hold on to the Quran, and hold on to the group of the Sahaba Ikram. This is the community that will take you towards the righteousness. And now somebody insists that they're not going to remain on this path of Quran and Sunnah, then that unity cannot be maintained, obviously, but the disunity will be the responsibility of the person who's doing what is wrong. For example, somebody insists that you're going to look at the bigger picture, and you could unite with anyone and everyone. And despite somebody might be saying, na'uzu billah, that the Quran Sharif is distorted, it's incomplete, like the Shia say. So now you're going to look at the bigger picture and remain united. This kind of unity is not possible. In the time of Abu Bakr radiallahu ta'ala an, when some people, faraway villages, Bedouins, they refused to pay the zakat that they were paying in the time of Rasulullah sallallahu alayhi wa sallam. Abu Bakr radiallahu anhu announced jihad against them. And when some others at that time initially just suggested that we should look at the bigger picture now, it's a very, very delicate time. And we should not weaken our ranks by now waging jihad against these people because they are refusing to pay the zakat. But Abu Bakr radiallahu anhu said, Wallahi la uqatilanna man farraqa bayna salati wa zakah. I will wage jihad against those who try to create a difference between salah and zakah. They say salah is fine, we'll perform salah, but we won't give zakat. I will wage jihad against them if they refuse to give that string they were giving in the time of Rasulullah sallallahu alaihi wasallam. That too, I will wage jihad against them for that. He didn't say at that time, you've got to look at the bigger picture. Or somebody makes it their way of life to revile the Sahaba-e-Kiram, to speak ill of them, to make all kinds of malicious comments against them, like is the way of the Shia again. So now somebody says, leave this aside, look at the bigger picture. So the bigger picture we got to understand in the light of the incident that took place in the time of Hazrat Umar radiallahu ta'ala an, that once there was a little, small little issue between Ubaidullah bin Umar radiallahu an, the son of Umar radiallahu an, Ubaidullah, and Miqdad bin Aswad radiallahu an. Some little words were exchanged. So in this, Hazrat Ubaidullah gave sets of harsh words to Miqdad bin Aswad radiallahu an. So he thought, what do I do about this? So he said, let me complain to his father, Umar radiallahu an. So he came and he complained to him that this is what your son said to me. Hazrat Umar is the Amirul Mu'mineen of the time. He says, really? He said this to you? And you are a Sahabi of Rasulullah sallallahu alaihi wasallam? Bring him here, I want to cut his tongue off. So when Ubaidullah became concerned that this might really happen, he went and brought along some other senior people, senior Sahaba, to intercede on behalf of Ubaidullah, when Miqdad bin Aswad feared that he might really do this. He said, no, I didn't mean it for something so serious. I thought you would just reprimand him and that would be it. No need to do this. It was just a little difference, some words were exchanged, nothing serious. Hazrat Umar said, no, let him come, bring him here. I want to cut his tongue and set a precedent. لا يوجد رجل شتم رجلا من أصحاب رسول الله صلى الله عليه وسلم إلا قطع لسانه. That later, anybody who reviles a Sahabi of Rasulullah sallallahu alaihi wasallam, then I would have set the precedent that his tongue should be cut. But in any case, others prevailed over him that this is now taking it a bit too far now. This wasn't so serious, so let it be. But this was the way in which Hazrat Umar radiallahu anhu viewed this. Later in time, Hazrat Ali radiallahu ta'ala anhu, one day he gives a khutbah and he addresses the entire gathering and he says, I hadn't given a prior warning. And I do not like to inflict a punishment without having given a prior warning. So I'm giving a prior warning today now. Listen carefully. That I am hearing about this, that people are giving me a position over and above that of Abu Bakr and Umar radiallahu anhuma. They are saying I am higher in rank. So let these people listen very carefully. I've now warned you. In future, if I hear the statement from anybody, or anybody is making the statement and it's reported to me, I will give him 80 lashes. The punishment for a person who has committed slander. Because by saying, I am greater than these two personalities, he has slandered them. They were the greatest of the personalities of the Ummah after Rasulullah sallallahu alaihi wasallam. Dare anybody speak like this in future, I will lash them 80 lashes. Sayyidina Ali radiallahu anhu said. At that time, he didn't say also, let us look at the bigger picture and let it be. So indeed, unity is very, very important. We have understood how important it is. But that unity can only be on one foundation. On the foundation of the Quran and Sunnah, on the way of the Sahaba-e-Kiram. And this unity has to be at every level. But on the same basis. Whether it is on a global level, and whether it is within the four walls of a home, that unity also can only be maintained. And there can only be happiness in the four walls of that home, provided that it is on the basis of Quran and Sunnah that home is run. But if that is not the case, everybody decides to do their own things, then it cannot happen that that house, that home runs in a way that it becomes an example of Jannat. An example of Jannat will come when it is on the way of Rasulullah sallallahu alaihi wasallam, when the laws of Allah tabarak wa ta'ala are implemented. So may Allah tabarak wa ta'ala give us a tawfiq of understanding the importance of this concept of unity. And as we said, that we are part of this global ummah. And the least that is required of us, which is the dictates of our iman, which is the dictates of us being part of this body of this ummah, is that we feel the pain of the ummah. And that pain should move us to at least make dua for them daily. Dua for every single mu'min on the face of this earth. And over and above that, that is the very basic, the least, the fundamental. And then over and above that, in whichever way we can do something to help anybody in the ummah, this is also our requirement. Allah tabarak wa ta'ala give us a tawfiq. Wa akhiru da'wana alhamdulillahi rabbil alamin.
Syntax CD Productions, bringing the sounds of Islam to you.